This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here and, I'll tell you why in a second. We're here January 18th, 2021, and we're going to talk about the thrift distributions, voluntary contribution program, and the like. And co-host Tammy Flanagan, we're having a little technical difficulty, but hopefully she'll be with us very soon. So here we are. We're going to talk about the thrift with various issues, and we have I can't believe this, but this is a very good listener, and it starts out and says, I'm retired and wish to start withdrawing my money from my TSP. What forms are needed, and how long does the process take? We'll answer this later on. Tammy talks about those forms. Do the forms need to be notarized, and are state and federal taxes taken out? Well, there are federal taxes taken out, and it's equal to 20% of the traditional TSP money taken. There are no state taxes taken out. Finally, taking money monthly or yearly make any difference? In theory, it would be great to take it yearly, but the issue of not having that cash flow for the year would, I think, get in its way. So I think the monthly way is the way to go. And we thank our listener for these questions and
Good morning, Bob.
Oh, my goodness. the cavalry has come.
I couldn't find my login to the Ring Central, so I apologize.
Oh, not a problem. I just, our friend from the, our friend sent in just a great question, and I just read it, but let's get to it after you and I talk about things, because this question is very good, but it assumes somebody would know the answers to it. Now, clearly you and I would, but why don't we just do that in a little bit? And sure. We'll talk about the thrift, the big change. It sounds like a movie, right? What was it, the big something? So the big change was what? Changing the elective deferral max?
No, that's actually stayed the same. So employees can still contribute $19,500 for 2021, just like they could last year. And then those employees who turn 50 in 2021 can throw in an extra $6,500 if they so desire. And so that gives a total of $26,000, just like last year. The difference is they no longer have to make the two separate elections. So they're calling this spillover contribution, so that once you've exceeded the $19,500 elective deferral limit, as long as you're turning 50 this year, those additional contributions will spill over as catch-up contributions. But you will still get the match the entire year as long as you don't run out of contributions before leave period 26.
So how many people know that?
I would hope everybody, but you never know. I know that we find sometimes, you know, things that we think are obvious. It never hurts to mention it again. I would hope that payroll and personnel offices have told employees that this was coming, because this is a pretty major change from the way we did business last year with the thrift. So if you haven't heard about it, or if you need more information about it, you can visit the TSP website. And they have some detailed information about this idea of spillover contributions.
Okay. So for 2021, the 19.5 is the same as what it was last year, correct?
That's right.
And it's still a nice number. But the reason that it stayed the same is it only changes if some percentage, like the cost of living index, goes up a certain amount, then the ability to put more money into this goes up. It's not, I don't think it's, well, you can do it this year or you can't do it. It's based on something more technical than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure what causes that to go up. You would probably know that better than me.
Yeah, it's a percent. And if it doesn't go up, a lot of things are called staggered within the tax world. So the 19.5 is a static number until it's raised, because X percent of the old number brings it to a higher level. But because inflation is so low, the cost of living is low, multiply that times the old number, it isn't enough for it to go up.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see that certainly with the thrift. You see it with IRAs. You see it with personal exemptions. So it permeates throughout the tax world, so that every year you don't, let's pick this one to go up because it had a bad year. It says whatever the cost of living was, this is what it will go up. But if it's not enough to go up to, say, $500, it doesn't go up until the next year when the sum of the two hits, say, $500. I'm pulling $500 just
out of the air. As an example. That's good.
So
that makes sense.
I hope I'm making sense with that.
Yep. Perfect sense. What about IRA contributions, Bob? What have they changed for this year? Is that the same thing? It's still the same
static
amount?
It's same thing.
And how much are they?
So what is it, $6,000?
Yeah. And then is there $1,000 catch up on those two?
Okay, so I have all my notes here, Tammy. So the general number is $6,000 max, and it's an additional $1,000 if you're over a certain age, 50 or older.
And I know one question that comes up all the time at this time of the year for people who have just recently retired at the end of December or even, you know, January 1st of this year is, can they still do a Roth contribution or a regular IRA contribution this year, even though they retired in 2020?
The Roth or traditional IRA is permissible if you had earned income any time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So for somebody that stayed on, or maybe even if you wanted to push it, if it was accumulated leave check because they left at the end of the year in the prior year, whatever you get in a calendar year is called cash basis. This is not highly technical. It says if you get money, you pay taxes on it. If you don't get money, you don't pay taxes on it. So it's called calendar year cash basis. And so each year it's tested about, I would say September, and they look at the cost of living and they say, okay, it was so low that it doesn't meet the minimum standard to go to the next higher tax deductible amount. Did I say too many tax-oriented things there?
I think that's okay. But the fact is, if they get a lump sum leave payment, which if they retired the end of last year, that leave check would have come in 2021. So that means they could make an IRA contribution based on the fact they got compensated for their deferred compensation of their annual leave, right?
And it's interesting you say that, too. It isn't necessarily because it's leave. It's because it winds up on somebody's W-2. It's called earned income.
I gotcha.
When anybody gets paid their salary, they have money taken out at a minimum for, assuming most everybody is FERS, they have Social Security, you know, both parts of that. And then depending on when they retire. So if they retire before the end of the year, they're already at their maximum Social Security level. So that's fine. But like you say, if the accumulated leave check came into the next year, it would be subject to Social Security. It would be subject to income tax, but maybe at a lower tax rate.
Right.
Now it also.
Yeah, and I think the fact that they're paying FICA tax, which is a wage tax, would tell you that that is considered wages for IRA contributions. So that would be good.
Right. It's first of all, you have to have earned income. And earned income is income that would be subject to FICA and
wage
Medicare.
Tax.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you'd say, well, I didn't earn it in the year. Well, you earned it in the prior year, but when you get it in the current year, that's when you pay taxes on it.
Got it. Makes sense.
You know, just to drive everyone nuts, maybe not so.
Well, let me add one more thing to that whole thing about the lump sum leave payment, because a lot of folks who are, let's say, under age 66 or under their full retirement age for Social Security might want to start Social Security benefits the month after they retire. And for a different definition of that lump sum leave check, that doesn't count against earnings because Social Security calls it a special payment. So they could receive their first Social Security payment and have the lump sum leave check not count against it. So I guess it depends on who you're asking for the definition, whether you're talking to Social Security or the IRS or somebody else, right?
Well, the IRS is they're not discriminatory. If you get it, you pay taxes on it.
Yep.
Unless you can find a deferral and whatnot. We're talking about the thrift. The traditional thrift, of course, provides a tax benefit. When the money goes in, it's tax deductible. The Roth thrift would not. That's not to say that the Roth thrift is not as good as the other. This is going to be different strokes for different folks. Some people will like the Roth idea and the fact that they'll never pay taxes on the earnings, but they won't get the tax deduction up front. Others would say, I want the tax deduction up front. I'll worry about paying the taxes on it when I get it. Again, this all spins off of something called calendar year tax basis taxpayers, all of us, regardless of the size of income. When we get it, it's taxable. When we spend it, it's deductible. There are some exceptions to that. People that might put money into an IRA in January or February for a prior year, that's not quite calendar year cash basis, but I'm probably going to drive people crazy by going any further than that.
Well, I would also recommend, because I was driving back from Florida or from Virginia to Florida yesterday, so I had a lot of time in the car to listen to podcasts, and I listened to the one with you and John Gillick a couple of weeks ago, which was excellent. And John gave some good information about the things that we're talking about right now. So if you want more along these lines, I would go back and listen to that podcast.
It's very easy to access it. John has all the folks that come on are good speakers and whatnot, but he's got kind of a calming effect on things that sometimes people don't find calm, managing money or, gee, I didn't know that, and here's a way around it.
Kind of like the funeral director who's real soft-spoken, so you're not too flustered at the meeting.
No, he
does have a good voice.
I don't think I've ever heard him go on a high pitch.
Nope.
Anywho, so the big change with regards to the thrift, after reaching the elective deferral limit before the end of the year, but they still continue to save, contributions will automatically continue towards the catch-up. So in other words, there's, quote, a deferral limit and then there's a catch-up, and I'm not so sure everybody knows that. I would like to think they do. But the catch-up age is 50, where other things are not that low.
Right. Yeah, 50 is pretty young. And you could be 49 until December 31st, and you're still considered turning 50 this year. So you can maybe start those catch-up contributions sooner than you had planned or sooner than you thought.
Yeah, and the some of the categories, the law enforcement folks, they generally retire at an earlier age than what the non-law enforcement folks would. And some of them retire before 50.
That's true.
And when you and I teach the classes, we're not doing it on site, but we do it through the airwaves, and we talk, but we don't get that same we don't get the questions. Now, if we teach in an agency, even though it's called virtual, we're not on site. As we teach, we can watch the questions come in on the screen. Mm-hmm. So anybody that hasn't been to one should probably go to one. Anyone that's gone to one and is listening, then you know the drill. I made the mistake early on with this. I tried to answer the questions as they came in. It took about 20 minutes to realize that was not the thing to do because you're just answering the questions and not giving the info.
Right. There's a fine line between saving everything for the end versus trying to address the questions as they come up. So the virtual world is a little different training than it is in our live classrooms, but we've adapted
it was a good learning experience too. It just isn't the same, but you still have to answer their questions.
That's right.
All righty. So what about contribution spilling over towards the catch-up limit? Is somebody, I guess, retiring at the end of the year, December 31st, late December, and the like, or do they push it into the next year? I don't know. Andrew's saying that's why I'm kind of stuttering here. Andrew says, it's time for a break. So why don't we do this? Why don't we take a break and keep Andrew happy and the sponsors of the show, WEPA, as well?
Federal open season is over, but there's never been a better time to reevaluate your life insurance coverage. Get life insurance for less with WAPA. WAPA has been insuring the future of federal employees for more than 75 years. WAPA can be used as a supplement or replacement for your existing policy and can cost less than Fegley. In fact, last year, members who switched saved $375 on average. Although open season is over, you can apply anytime for WAPA Group Term Life Insurance. See how much you can save by visiting WAPA.org today.
All righty, welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today and we're talking about taxes. And we talked a good bit about thrift. And my colleague, co-host of the show, Tammy Flanagan, is here as well to explore the things that I would never understand. Thank goodness I've known Tammy for how many years?
Too many to keep counting, right, Bob? I think we met it around the late 1980s.
Yeah. And you were, I think, 16 then.
That's right. I was just a babe in the woods.
All righty. So we have a prolific emailer. I promise not to tell you what state this person is in, but this just came in at 10 o'clock our time, which is about the time we start the show. And here we go. And this is a question. This is not necessarily this person. I'm retired and wish to start withdrawing my money from my TSP. What forms are needed and how long does the process take? I'll just go through the questions and then we'll come back and answer each. Do the forms need to be notarized and are state and federal taxes taken out? Finally, taking monthly or yearly withdrawals make any difference? So let's go to the first one. What forms are needed with regards to withdrawing money from the TSP?
Well, the important thing is that you have your TSP access to your online account set up because you're going to start the withdrawal process on the TSP website. So there's no longer a printed form that's available at tsp.gov. You actually go into your TSP account. And you'll notice that whenever your payroll office has notified the thrift plan that you're eligible to make withdrawals, that's going to be kind of lit up on the site. Until then, you're still going to be treated as an employee. So you have to wait. Usually it takes generally less than 30 days for your payroll office to notify the TSP that you have been completely separated off the payroll. And so now you are eligible to make your withdrawals if you so choose. So you'll notice that's available to you once that's happened. So for recent retirees, I would give it till the end of January to be sure that you're eligible to take those withdrawals. Now, once you fill out the online form, it's going to walk you through a series of questions of what is it that you're trying to do? Do you want to take monthly payments? Are you interested in the annuity option? So you have a lot of different choices. You have some flexibility with how to take the money out of the thrift. So I would recommend reading the TSP withdrawal options using the TSP online calculator to figure out the different ways you can withdraw money, whether you want to take a payment based on your age or life expectancy, whether you have a certain dollar amount in mind, like you want to take out $2,000 a month or $2,500, or whether you are going to purchase a life annuity, which is a very serious thing to do because that's no turning back once you've done that. So be sure you're really familiar with the different withdrawal options before you begin to fill out that application. Now, once you're finished, if you indicate that you're a FERS employee who is married on the day of retirement, you will need to get your spouse's notarized consent in order to make your withdrawal because there are spousal rights associated with the TSP, just like there is with your retirement and other assets that you have jointly. So I know a lot of people have a little concern with that. They're like, well, that's my paycheck and I put it in a thrift, so why do I have to get my spouse's consent? Well, because you do. So you do need spouse's notarized consent. If you're a CSRS retiree, then the TSP will notify your spouse. They don't have to give consent. But under FERS, since the TSP is an integral part of the FERS retirement, you will have to have that. So once you're finished, you can generally print out the form, go get it notarized, and then mail it back or fax it back or upload it to the TSP website, one of those different methods, and you'll be able to get your withdrawal usually within about 2 weeks, give or take. the day they process the withdrawal. So let's say that they process your withdrawal on February 8th, then every month on the 8th of the month is when you'll expect that monthly payment to come. So the payments are staggered throughout the month. So they don't always come on the first day of the month. They come based on your first payment. So that's good to be aware of that as well.
So once that's established, once that's established, can somebody say, gee, the 8th is too late for me. I really need it the end of the month, last day of the whatever the month is, or the first of the month. Can they change?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if they let you go in there and request a different payment date or not. I don't believe so, but that could be something that you could do. I just don't know for sure.
Well, that would be my answer as well. And I think besides that answer, somebody that might be very active in their imagination. So they're going to start on the first. Well, no, I didn't like that. I'm going to try mid-month. And then they didn't like that. They're going to try it at the end of the month. So there'd be probably a lot of choices, be nothing wrong with that. But invariably, the more choices, the more people take issue with it.
That's right. And then the other question they had asked was about taxes. So I'll let you handle how you pay your taxes on those withdrawals, because if it's traditional money, it's never been taxed, right? None of it. The agency money, your money, the growth on it. So how do you handle the taxes when you start withdrawing from the thrift?
Well, it's somewhat easy. It's 100% taxable.
Yep. Is that ordinary tax, or do you have to pay capital gains tax, or how does that work?
Good question. So the first issue, okay, this is kind of a mandatory eventually, depending on your age, or if you elected earlier, it's going to start coming. And when it comes, all of us are considered cash basis taxpayers. Sounds kind of illegal, doesn't it? But it means, when did you get the money? It really has nothing to do with when you earned it. Perfect example of that. If at the end of the month you thought, well, you know, I'll get my salary check, well, you're not going to get it until the next month when all the calculations are made. Well, in retirement, it's no different. So if it starts at the end of the month, it starts then, and then it continues on for the remainder of one's life, and beyond that if there's a survivor's annuity. And so then you'd say, wow. And we're talking about the traditional now. So if we get it, we pay taxes on it. And somebody says, how do I know what my taxes are going to be? And it's a great question, especially in retirement, and especially with somebody with FERS. CSRSers, I won't say have it easier, but they have one large annuity, and that's going to make up the bulk of it, right? There isn't necessarily they all have thrift, but they won't maybe have Social Security. So when income comes in, it's taxable. And you'd say, why? I shouldn't have to pay tax on all that money. Well, the reason is you've never paid tax on all that money. So then, as Tammy mentioned, it's subject to what they call regular income tax. You don't get the special treatment. You may have heard of the term capital gains. So capital gains are a lower tax rate, but these don't qualify for that. Somebody actually years ago got very exercised about it because they didn't understand. And they go, well, if I take money in my private investments and I make money on it, I make a gain, I pay a lower tax because I get what's called a capital gain. Well, this is not an investment. Yeah, you invested a lifetime of earnings and the like, but when it's paid out, it's not paid out under that special provision. So you are subject to tax on 100% of that. If you're talking about your annuity, you wouldn't pay tax on 100% of that because you put money into the annuity over the years through withholdings. So I'm probably getting a little bit out there with taxes, but taxes are rougher, I think, sometimes in retirement because you have, at a minimum, this annuity. And the annuity is not 100% taxable, but it's somewhat close to it. Social Security, taxable at three different levels, and the money coming out of the traditional thrift, not the Roth thrift. The traditional thrift is 100% taxable. And you'd say, why? Because nobody's ever paid tax on it. Not the money that went into it, because we put that in, we got a tax deduction. So when it comes back out, it's going to be taxable along with the growth. Now, did I make any sense with that, Tammy?
Yeah, that was a good overview for people to understand that, number one, don't forget about taxes, because that is something you can't get around even though you're now retired. And I guess that's a good thing too, because there are people who live out their retirement in a tax-free status. But luckily, that's not most of our federal retirees, because they have income besides their Social Security check, which generally does push them into a tax bracket where they do have to pay some income tax. So that's, I guess that's a good thing. The other thing I was going to mention, Bob, is that if someone's looking for a good overview of how to access your TSP account after retirement, and how to determine the different withdrawal options, and how to prioritize your savings goals, the TSP has this wonderful series of webinars that they have on their website. So if you go to tsp.gov and in the search engine put in training resources, and you're going to see one that's called TSP to Retirement and Beyond, and there's a part one and part two of that. There's also one for pre-retirees called Pre-Separation Training, and there's one on the investment funds, just a ton of good live webinars. So you have to register for them. There are several dates coming up in January and February, and these are ongoing throughout the year. And when you do sign up, you have a chance to ask questions, and they're interactive. So that's another good place to go for help whenever you're trying to decide what to do in those first months of retirement with this hard-earned savings that you have.
Again, it's interesting you say that. Sometimes in a joint situation where one person is a federal employee and the other one is a private industry, I'm not saying anything bad about private industry, but I don't think all of them go to the extent that the thrift does to explain how that they have a 401k plan. The thrift is not a 401k, but it walks and quacks like one. So the one spouse might be jealous of the other. But what I'm trying to say is, as Tammy mentioned, these things are just there for your taking. But they do only involve the thrift. They don't get into other retirement vehicles.
Right. And they walk a fine line between giving information and providing advice. So if you are looking for advice, then as John mentioned a couple of weeks ago, you may want to engage with a financial professional and work with someone to help you really make some sound investment choices, some sound withdrawal choices, and also how to manage the taxes. Tax planning is a big part of retirement planning these days, with so many different issues affecting your taxable income.
Yeah, so if we take another segue into taxes, taxes actually, I think, are not more expensive to people in retirement than before, but their deductions aren't as much. They're itemized deductions. Generally speaking, the mortgage that they have at that stage of life maybe isn't as high as what it was during the mid-career and early pre-retirement, so we don't maybe have as much in tax deductions. Further, they've skinnied away some tax deductions, especially in the state and local income tax area and real estate tax area, so we don't get as much. Now, I'm not saying this to say, well, this is terrible, because in reality, they reduce some of the tax rates. But nonetheless, the first time somebody hits that flat amount called the standard deduction, they're kind of upset that they can't get the other deductions. Now, there are some ways, and you have to be pretty aggressive to do this, but you could itemize every other year. So you could push back contributions, but again, that might violate somebody's fairness. I want to make this contribution to the people that need it while they need it. They shouldn't have to wait. Paying your real estate taxes every other year probably will result in a penalty that is greater than the tax savings. Maybe not. Same with state and local income tax. So your different itemized deductions would be interest, usually with a mortgage, but not always, and real estate taxes and other taxes. It doesn't necessarily have to be on your house. But to know all this, you got to know it every other year anyway. And most people, I would say not most people, but many people, they just don't like doing that tax return. They might be smart. They might be smarter than I'll ever be. But they just, it's not always common sense with income taxes.
That's right. So I think one of the other things we wanted to talk today about, maybe we'll need the full rest of the program to do this, but I think it's an important topic for our CSRS employees. I just had someone email me this morning who's under the old retirement system, and I'll bet you any money they don't know about the hidden secret that you can still take advantage of if you're covered under either CSRS or CSRS offset, and that is the ability to make voluntary contributions. So before we move into that, Bob, were we done with the TSP?
I think so. We can always come back. So the voluntary contribution, correct me if I'm wrong, this is not a contribution to a charity. This is a contribution to yourself.
That's right.
And it operates. I'm just going to ask you because I'm the student here. So it operates that it's a you're going to make the payment. So it isn't something coming out of your annuity or whatnot. You have to write a check for this, and then once you do, then you've got money into the system, and you go, well, what am I going to get for my money in the system? And here's where I get lost.
All right. So first of all, it's kind of a two-step process if you want to make voluntary contributions. So the first step is to apply for an account. Just like you're going down to your local bank account to open up a savings account, you're going to go to the Office of Personnel Management and open up a voluntary contributions account, which is more or less a savings account that's attached to your retirement contributions. And the form for that is the standard form 2804. And part of the reason why you have to make this request or this application is because, number one, only CSRS employees are eligible. And number two, if you already owe money to the retirement fund because maybe you took a refund of contributions at some point in the past, or maybe you've had some service that wasn't covered by CSRS, maybe you had a seasonal job or a summer job way back when. So if you have any outstanding contributions or any outstanding deposits, you would need to pay those off first. You have to have a paid up account, and then you can make additional contributions towards this program. So once OPM has established the account for you, they'll let you know. They'll say, okay, now you pass, you're allowed to have the account. So now you have to decide how much money you want to contribute. Well, the benefit of contributions is, number one, while you're still working, you know, those of you who plan to continue to work under CSRS for a number of years, those contributions will earn interest, which currently for 2021, the interest rate is 1.375%. So I know that's not a huge amount of interest, but it's probably better than your savings account at the bank is paying. And it's all tax deferred interest. So while it's growing, you don't pay tax on the growth. Now you can contribute anywhere from $50 to as much as 10% of your salary. And that's not just this year's salary. That's 10% of your entire federal salary going back to your first appointment. So for a lot of CSRS employees who have been in the government since the 80s or 70s, that could be a six-figure number. So if you happen to have, you know, $150,000 laying around somewhere and you'd like to put it into this account and earn 1.375% interest this year, that's a good thing. Now, that's not the hidden secret. That's not why people are doing this necessarily. I think the big reason why people want to make voluntary contributions is because this is money that's going into a retirement account and is therefore eligible to be transferred to an IRA. So once you take the money out of voluntary contributions, which you have to do this at the time you retire or while your retirement is being processed, then you can shift that money over to your either traditional IRA where it can stay tax deferred growth, or you can transfer to a Roth IRA. And the only part of that that you have to pay tax on first is the interest. So if you didn't accrue any interest because maybe you're doing this with your initial retirement application, then the whole thing is eligible to be moved into a Roth IRA where it can sit there and grow tax free. So there's your Roth account set aside for the future. So this is a nice way, and I think the term for this, Bob, is backdoor Roth, right?
It's a backdoor Roth, but why don't we do this? Your explanation was spot on, but we're 40 minutes into the show, and some people may say, could you rediscuss that after you come back from the break? So why don't we take a break, and then we'll look at the spot on definition of how the VC works from Tammy.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today talking about changes to the TSP, CSRS, Voluntary Contribution Program, other tips as well. And we were talking about the Voluntary Contribution Program, again, isn't it reserved for CSRS and CSRS offsets with no loan?
With no outstanding deposits, that's right.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yeah, and I wanted to add to that, if somebody has just recently retired at the end of 2020, and you might think, oh gosh, I just missed the boat on this because I've already separated. Not necessarily, because it is going to take OPM several weeks, if not several months, to process your retirement. So while that application is in process, you can go ahead and set up your VC account, and before they finalize your claim at OPM, you could make that contribution. And at the same time you make the contribution, you would send in the request to withdraw the money. So it's almost like it's going in the account one day and then moving directly to your IRA the same day. So there's two forms. There's the form that you start the contributions, the application, the SF-2804, and then there's the form to take the money out, which is called a voluntary contribution election form. And that's a different number. It's a retirement and insurance form. It's an RI-38-124, and it's called Voluntary Contributions Election. Now, if you're looking for these forms and you want to kind of review this before you decide what you're going to do, you can find both of these forms at opm.gov. Right at the top of the home page, you'll see where it says Forms and Publications, and those are listed right there.
Okay, so back to the back door. So I think the easiest way to picture this, at least I found it when I first heard about it, and I had to understand it first before I could talk to anybody about it. If all of us just picture yourself now and say, I want to put some money into an IRA this year. Whenever I do it, I do it, but I want to do it. But in particular, I want to put it into a Roth IRA. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to do that, but sometimes you can't do it if your income's too high. But there's still a way to get the money in. You just can't go in the front door. You go in the back door, which sounds a little suspect, a little sleazy, but this has nothing to do with suspect or sleazy. But here's the path now. The destination is the Roth IRA, but because of our income, we can't do it directly from our pocket to the Roth. But we can put money into a traditional IRA, regardless of the size of our income. So we could be, gazillionaires, or we could just be making it. It doesn't make any difference. So we put money into the traditional IRA. And about as fast as we do that, we want to transfer it to a Roth IRA. And you go, is that all there is to it? No. But this is the way to look at it from the first step. In other words, we'd like to do it directly, but we might not be able to because of the size of our income. So we can still get the money into the Roth, not by going in the front door, but by going in the back door. Nothing, again, suspect about it. So we put X dollars into the traditional IRA, and if we're really on top of it, we want to move it over to the Roth IRA. We want to transfer it over there as soon as we can, and we actually went around the prohibited transaction. Did I make sense, Tammy?
I think so. And I think another thing for people to know is that on the form, they have made it about as simple as possible, because the form to take your money out, has it's broken into two sections. It says the interest portion, that's that 1.375% interest you may have been earning, that you can send directly to the thrift. And that's one of the checkboxes, pay all directly to my TSP account or pay it to me, and they will withhold tax from it. The other portion is your after-tax portion. That's the 10% of your lifetime salary that you've put into this account. Remember, the money you're contributing to Roth or to voluntary contributions is after-tax money. So you're not getting a tax deduction when you contribute it. So contribute into this. So this could be money you have in a savings account, or possibly money you've gotten inherited from a life insurance policy or something like that. And on that portion, you have two options: pay all to me or pay all to my individual retirement arrangement. And they'll ask you, are you putting this into a Roth IRA, yes or no? And they want to know the name of the plan, and they'll deliver it directly to them. So they make it about as easy as they could on the form. So we were happy to see when that form was updated a few years back, right, Bob?
Yes, yes, yes. I remember when you and I came up with an idea that you could move large dollar amounts into this. And remember, we couldn't get anybody to agree with us except the law. And but this is a subset of it. Now, what I'd like to do is, I didn't do it when I explained it, only because it gets too hairy. So let's go back to the first step. We want to get money into a Roth IRA. We can't directly invest into a Roth because our income is too high. If our income is not too high, we can put the money directly into the Roth. But let's say that, it is too high, so we have to have the money first go into the traditional IRA. Now, some people will say, well, if you're putting money into the traditional IRA that I've had for a while, it's made some money over the years. Interest, made some money in the market, etc. Aren't I going to get hit with some taxes here? And the answer is, well, not if you won't get hit with taxes if you do this. If you can define the amount of money that's in there other than what you put into it, you can move that money into the TSP. It transfers right into the TSP. So I'll use a number example, and you can multiply this by whatever you want. If you put $10,000 into an IRA, whenever you did, you didn't get a tax deduction for it, most likely. After a few years, that money had grown to $13,000. In other words, there was $3,000 of growth plus the $10,000 that we initially put in. But you're going to have trouble with the backdoor Roth with taxes. So you can cull out $3,000. Again, that's the investment earnings from the amount of money that we put in, and we can transfer it into the TSP. The only thing left at that point inside of the IRA is the $10,000 that we initially put into it, that's not going to be taxed. So we get the money into the thrift. We move the traditional IRA without any earnings in it into the Roth IRA, and we accomplish what we want tax-free.
There you go.
Did that make sense?
That made sense, and it's kind of the same way with voluntary contributions. So there are some CSRS employees who listen to information about this program over the past years of their career. So there could be some employees who have had this account for 20 years or 30 years, where it's maybe half interest and half contributions at this point. So they can do the same thing. They can, like you said, call off the interest, move that directly to the thrift, and then the principal that's already taxed money that came in to this account after tax, that's what's eligible to move directly to the Roth with no tax burden whatsoever.
And I'm sure over the years, the volume of people doing this is become smaller, because the people that can do it, CSRS and CSRS, said have become smaller. And
that's right.
And they would say, really? And then they could do it. But sometimes when we're doing the virtuals, or when we used to do it on site, there were three or four people in a class that was CSRS and had no idea what we were talking about. And we'd have a little 3 or 4 page description of how it works. And people go, really? And some people say, this is too hard. And other people say, well, wait a minute, it'd be hard. Maybe if I can get tax-deferred interest or I can get it into, I want to hear more about it. And we did a radio show a long time ago that's patterned after today's show. So right. Today's show will replace the older one because we know more about things and changes in the law have changed.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and let me just restate who's eligible because I want to make sure people understand this. And I'm going to read this right off of the form so that people who are CSRS or CSRS offset understand that they meet this requirement. So who may make voluntary contributions? Active employees covered under civil service retirement system or offset, or retired employees whose application for retirement is being adjudicated. That means you just retired, OPM hasn't made your final payment yet, so you're still in the adjudication process. So you're eligible as well. And so you need to send in that application to make voluntary contributions and get it approved by OPM before your account has been finalized. And then you'll be able to make those contributions, put the money out of the program into your IRA account, and do all of that by the time your first regular annuity check comes in the mail. So it is a neat opportunity for someone who is still working. I know this is a small segment of the population right now. I think last I heard it's less than 5% of our federal workforce is under CSRS. And boy, that seems funny, Bob, doesn't it? Because when we first started this back in 1988, it was hard to find a FERS employee in a retirement class. And now we have to hold classes for FERS only. And we feel like we're leaving out some of the CSRS employees. So this program today is really geared for our CSRS audience, at least the second half. So this is something just for you.
Yeah, I remember the CSRS folks when they made that change. They said, I don't want to put money into the TSP. You know, I have to wait so long to get it. And TSP has turned out to be just a fabulous investment. And so they've got that, and the CSRSers have the voluntary contribution program. But the voluntary contribution program is so good that they just couldn't keep doing it.
That's right. Yeah, and I've had people ask me that question. Should I put the money in the TSP if I'm CSRS, or should I put it in voluntary contributions? And I think it's two different things. Because with the voluntary contributions, you cannot make payroll deductions. You know, so the only way to get money into voluntary contributions, I think you mentioned it, Bob, is either to mail in a check, or you can go to mypay.gov, or pay.gov, I should say, and you can actually put this on your credit card if you want to, but you cannot do payroll deductions into voluntary contributions. Where with the TSP account, that's the only way to put money in is through payroll allotment. And of course, with the TSP, even CSRS employees can get the pre-tax contributions, where that's not the case with the voluntary program. So it's two different things. You can certainly do both, but this, I think, serves a different purpose than the TSP, don't you think?
Exactly. And correct me if I'm wrong, if I have a Roth TSP, excuse me, if I have a TSP, excuse me, mm-hmm. Can I transfer it directly into the Roth TSP? I don't know that I can.
You're saying if I have money in the traditional TSP, uh-huh. Can I move it into the Roth TSP? No.
Okay.
No, unfortunately you can. I think with some private sector plans that might be an option, but the TSP does not allow transfers within the thrift from traditional to Roth, because then you'd have the tax issue with the money that's never been taxed. So no, they don't allow that.
But and the workaround, if somebody was in that case and they said, well, you just ruined my planning, that same person with a TSP can transfer, as we've talked before, into a traditional IRA. Now, once that money's in the traditional IRA, then that same money can be transferred to a Roth IRA that then can be transferred to a Roth TSP.
There you go. Yep. There's some things you can move around, and there's some things you have to be careful of. So sometimes it might help to get some some assistance on this. I will tell you that your agency's HR office may or may not be familiar with the voluntary contribution program, because it's not a real popular thing right now, because there's very few people who can even do it. But you can certainly email myself or I guess you as well, Bob, and
sure,
we can send you some additional information about it if you're interested.
Okay, now how do they get you, Tammy?
They could go to either my website, which is retirefederal.com, or they can email me directly at Tammy@, and that's T-A-M-M-Y. I know people spell my name different ways, but it's the Tammy song by, who was it, back in the 50s?
Tammy Wynette, wasn't it?
No, I think it was, I want to say Doris Day, but I don't think that was it.
Oh, yeah, that was a movie.
Tammy's in Love. Yeah, yep. Yeah. That's what I was named after. But anyway, so you can email me at Tammy@retirefederal.com.
Andrew just gave me the peace sign, which is, in other words, you got 2 minutes to go. Stop geezing. All righty. Quick final comments, Tammy.
Well, I think that employees have opportunities this year, whether it's the TSP with the spillover contributions, being able to maximize their money in the thrift and get the maximum agency contribution. So that's for all employees, whether they're CSRS or FERS. And then, of course, our CSRS employees should really take a look at this voluntary contribution program, see if they can find some money that they can contribute to this and take advantage of setting aside some tax-free money for the future, because tax rates could go up, and it's nice to have some money that you can take out as needed that you're not going to have to include in your taxable income.
Amen. And for somebody that's very cautious, this is almost without risk, isn't it? Put the money in the G fund. Anyway, so Andrew says it's time for you two to stop and let the people listen to the show maybe a couple times, because it had some spot on information, but maybe something that isn't fully understood the first time. Tammy? Great having you. The duo continues, huh?
Thank you, Bob. It was great to be here, and I'm glad to be back in Florida after my long 14 and a half hour drive yesterday. So good to be back.
All righty. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.